This episode is brought to you by First Response. First Response recognizes that not all pregnancies are the same, and neither is the road to get there. The First Response brand is fervently committed to supporting, sharing, and empowering all pregnancy journeys and providing accurate information, especially to those struggling with infertility, loss of a baby, and maternal health inequities. With a variety of tests that detect pregnancy hormones early and often, First Response is there for you every step of the way. All First Response pregnancy test products are available for purchase at all major retailers in-store and online. Be sure to pick one up today. A quick note before we get into the episode, Oversharing is a podcast for entertainment purposes only. It is not a medical podcast and does not constitute medical or psychological advice. Always seek the advice of your physician or mental health professional. Hello and welcome back to Oversharing. I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
Hello. Welcome back from the weekend.
Welcome back. Back to reality.
How are you feeling in your week post vacation?
Oh, you know, not bad. Today was the first day back at school in a long time, like probably almost 2 weeks. So, and they did pretty good. They got up, they got out.
Was it spring break?
It was spring break. We actually let them stay like a couple of days before spring break so we could not have to pay as much on our vacation.
Yeah.
Just lining it up completely with spring break. So they've been out of school 3 days plus spring break.
And how do you feel about that?
It's been a minute.
That they're back.
I always feel like kind of torn. You know, it's like those moments where I'm like, okay, time for school to start. I need my quiet and alone time. I need to work. I need to exercise. I need to do my thing. But then when they're gone, it's like, oh,
well,
sad.
They'll be back at like 2.
They'll be back before I know it. And then I always remind myself of that. So
right. It's nice to have some balance, I'm sure.
Totally. It's great. It's great. It's nice and quiet. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have much to bring since we just recorded on Friday. So I guess we could just like jump right into our emails this week.
All right. You don't have anything going on that you want to share?
No.
Process?
It's rainy. It's cold. It's a weird time of year. I guess I feel like March is actually like the worst month in New York of the year. Because
March, not February.
I used to think February, but February is sort of like over in a blink. It's like a short month. And then March is like, The weather is kind of just as bad as February.
And you're sort of expecting that it's actually going to be nicer, but then it never is. In New York here, it's like the flowers are blooming.
You don't
it's
have
starting
to
get nice out. It's weird. There's this thing in Texas where it's like the grass goes dormant. So, which I didn't know. It's like, you know, I don't know what month it is. Maybe like December, the grass all turns like this kind of yellowish, like golden yellow color. And then all of a sudden, like when we got back from vacation, the grass was all like green again. It's weird. It happens in like 3 days. So that, when that grass turns green, it's like,
well, that sounds nice. Sprung. Plus you get an extra hour. So
yeah.
So that's also probably good for like the seasonal affective disorder. But I do think
totally.
That.
Although I will say the annoying thing about daylight savings is like we're up at 6:30 and it's really dark. And that's annoying. I don't like waking up in the dark. So it's light later, but like, I don't know.
Right. I mean,
it's not my favorite.
For us childless people, we're up at like 8:30. So it looks
it's
the
nice
same.
And bright.
It's just more light. There's no darkness trade-off for us.
On the other side, yeah. Totally.
So I can't say I relate to that. But I also think that March, additionally, not to harp on the months, is like you've also, more than February, you've been in it longer. Like it's just now it's been longer than February.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But it's also hopeful because you're like just around the corner.
Just around the corner. April's legit. April's, you know.
Yeah.
It's not winter anymore in April. Although I remember living in New York. I could agree. It was like by March, even when it's like you get that cold snap the first week in April, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like enough.
It's enough. It's over. Yeah. So it feels a little far away, but.
Yeah. You'll get there.
We will.
Hop on a plane. Come on out. You'll see some green grass.
I'm coming.
Flowers,
in
little sunshine.
I'm coming in May.
Oh, yes.
It's gonna be
all
great.
Right, cool.
I'm excited.
The pool will be Luke.
Nice.
It's going to be great.
Luke, like lukewarm?
I'm excited for that. Yeah, lukewarm.
Nice. Love it. Love a nice heated pool.
Yeah. All right, let's do this.
Okay. If you have an email you want to send in, you can email us at oversharing@betches.com. Or if you have a voicemail, you can leave us a voicemail at 646-363-6294. I'll read today's first overshare. Hi, Jordana and Dr. Naomi. I'm a recent fan of the podcast, started listening in late 2022. So I'm still catching up on some old episodes. So apologize if you already talked about this in an oldie. We didn't. I'm a 33-year-old female and married for 6 years now, 10 years in total with the same person. He is 38. We have been together and moved from Latin America to Europe together 5 years ago, just the two of us. So our marriage has been full of adventure. I love him. He is one of the best people I know. And so far, we have been really happy together. Early in our relationship, I told him I did not want kids in my life. He accepted it, and that is why we're still together. And 3 years ago, I decided to go for the surgery, so I'm pills free now. Yeah, so I assume that means she got like her tubes tied or something. I don't know if they still call it that, but
it seems kind of, it does seem kind of like archaic, but right? Yeah, that probably is what they call
it. I'm sure that's not like the medical term, but that's right. Whatever. She got it permanently, it seems like, happened. My concern is that in the past 3 months, he is questioning if he actually wants to be a dad. This is something in the past he did not need. From what I mean is that I know he didn't like lie in the past when we had a conversation about it. But I'm not sure if it's because all of our friends back home are having kids that he's now thinking about it, or his need will be something he'll be able to sacrifice in order to continue our relationship. As this is, for me, a deal breaker. I do not want to be a mom. No adopting, no nothing. Is there anything I can do to help him clarify if he wants to be a dad or not? How can I be so sure that he is not waiting for a miracle to happen? Which I assume she means like her changing her mind. What is the best way to approach this topic without giving the impression that I don't care if you go, but also give him my position about it? I love him, but I do not want him to resent me for not having this missing experience in the future. So I'm willing to give a step back and end our relationship if this is something he really needs. But I'm terrified to live with this fear for years and years. Thanks for the advice, Anon Mommy Betch.
Yeah, great question. I think more people probably experience this than she thinks. Because a lot of people don't really talk about this. Her strength here is that she knows what she wants, like for sure. She sounds unwavering in her decision, which is, you know, 3/4 of the battle. She's not doing the thing where she's like, should I just do it? Should I give in? Maybe I could like, you know, she's not doing any of that. She's, I don't want this. Now it's really in his ballpark to decide what he wants to do.
I actually also think that it's very like, it's a very caring position that she has, because she could have the position of like, I don't want this. And like, it doesn't, if... And I'm just going to be in this relationship as long as like, if like I said my thing, and if he doesn't want it, fine. Like it's on, she instead of putting it all on him to kind of make the decision, she's like, I don't want him to be like resentful of this is what he wants. I want him to have it.
Totally.
So I think that's like a very caring position. Cause I think a lot of people would just be like, well, I've said what I want and that's all I needed to do. And now you figure like whatever you want to do.
Right. Either you're in or you're out, like making it behavioral. Like it's about whether he stays or goes versus the realistic, very realistic option is that he stays and he's resentful and sad and, you know, unhappy and unsatisfied.
Right.
So yeah, I agree. I think this is just, you know, this is not going to be an easy conversation. And I don't think that just because he is expressing, and I don't know exactly what he's expressing, but if he's just saying, oh, that would be nice, or oh, I wonder if, you know, I would want that, or, you know, I think she can just offer to be kind of a supportive listening ear as he figures it out, which is hard because it obviously is going to affect her. It's not like she's a neutral party in this. She's affected by his decision. But I do think if she can bring herself to just kind of allowing him to process this with her, that would be the best bet. Because this is, you know, it's almost any of these big life decisions. Like we talked a few weeks ago about the person who is looking to potentially change their pronouns and maybe change their gender identity. This is not a decision that you're going to make overnight. This is something that is going to be a series of conversations and a series of kind of watching your process. Maybe one day you feel really strongly and the next day you don't. And how often are you feeling strongly versus how often are you feeling like, okay, I like our life. So that, you know, the whole idea of life is, you know, a collection of moments. And sometimes to make a decision, you just have to summarize the frequency and intensity of those moments. So that is probably going to be a process for them. But I think if she can just say, look, I want to be part of this with you. I love you. I want, you know, you to be happy. I will miss our relationship terribly if it doesn't work out, but I do want to be here for you as you explore this, which I agree with you. I think she sounds like a great partner for that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess the way that she's phrasing it is like, how do I let him know that, like, I'm willing to walk if this is something that he wants? Is like,
right.
I guess the part that she's like concerned about coming off kind of harsh for. Because I mean, I think whenever anyone feels like they're sort of like unmoving on a decision, and I've had this too, where it's like, when is it okay to be like, I'm hell bent on this decision and I'm not moving? Like, does that make you uncompromising? Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it can feel like by having a strong feeling about something, you're being stubborn or you're not willing to compromise or you're not willing to find a thing. But like, when is it okay to just say like, well, I don't care. That's just how I feel. And like, I don't really want to like discuss why I might want the other thing or why this decision is different or find a middle ground. Like, this is just what I want. And I don't really like, I think it is because in my head, when I have those feelings of like absolutism about something, I'm like, is it okay that I feel this way? Or is it something, or is that something that I should be compromising on?
I totally hear you, but this isn't like, do we get a rain water shower or a traditional shower? This one, I think, is one where you shouldn't compromise.
Okay.
I just, you know, I think if you are going to commit to not, people like to say 18 years, but it's really like for the rest of your life to taking on this role that you don't want, I don't think that's a place where there's room for compromise. If she knows for a fact that she doesn't want this responsibility, there's no compromise there, I think, you know, which is why I start off by saying, like, I respect her for saying, I don't, this is not something that I'm willing to compromise, because it's an all day, every day for the rest of your life commitment. If you're going to do it in the way that, you know, is a responsible way to do it. So there's certain things that I think are, you don't have to compromise on. If it's like little comforts or something that makes you just kind of feel like slightly nervous or just not what you're used to. I don't know if there's others that you could think of. To me, having kids is one that's sort of like, if it's in your soul that you want to be a mother or a father, not having that, I do think can make you feel unsatisfied.
I guess it's like a binary thing.
If it's in your soul
thing.
To say, I don't want this responsibility at all. And it's going to like kind of take over this life that I've envisioned going very differently.
Because I guess it's not like, it's like a, you can't be like a little bit of a mom.
Right. Exactly.
Like when you feel like on the days that you feel like it, on the ways where like, you know, if you got a pet, let's say, and the other person was like, I don't really want a pet, but if you're going to take care of it, like, it's fine, I guess. Like,
you do it.
Right. Like, I guess, I think that's a little bit different. I feel like I think some people probably approach kids that way if they don't really want them, but the other person does, like,
yes.
You just do it.
Okay. Like, you do most of it. I know couples like that where it's like, okay. And it's typically was the reverse. The mom wants, the dad's not really. And she's like, I'll do most of it. And you just kind of do, you know, some parts. And sometimes people grow into it. And once the child comes, usually they feel a sense of attachment and it ends up working out. But I think that if that's something, forcing someone into that, I don't think is beneficial. I mean, even something like, another one that pops into my mind is like, where do you live, right? Where people have breakup over, I want to live here where my family is versus I, you know, want to live there. I want to move to, you know, London and I want to stay in the States. And even that one feels like there's a little more room for compromise. You know, that's a big deal too. But there's even like, okay, well, we can hold
go there
two
every
homes
summer.
Or maybe go there every summer. Or there's like ways that you can wiggle around that. This one, I could see why this is an issue. And I think he's not going to love the truth that she has to share, which is, I'm a hard no. And if this is something you want and feel like you're going to be unsatisfied in, then you know, we'll both probably be happier, you know, living the life that we want. Because whether or not you have children is, you know, I think a huge part of your entire lifestyle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, okay. So what if he decides that he does, that he's okay to give it up and he doesn't want it badly enough to leave the relationship? Like,
it sounds like she's afraid that he's going to just say that to keep the relationship, but secretly feel like a longing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough. I mean, she can't, you know, I don't think she's going to kick him. I don't think she should kick him out of the relationship if he's like, no, I really want to do this. And this is something that I'm willing to give up on. Obviously, there was a part of him at some point that felt like he would rather have a child-free lifestyle. So this isn't, you know, this happens where it's sort of like people agree to have kids and then one of them decides that they don't want it right when they've already agreed to do it.
Or I think a lot of people feel this way from what I've heard about like a third kid or a second kid. When one person's like, that's enough for me,
yes.
And the other one is kind of like not interested in that.
That's a big deal for couples. I see that a lot. People will come in where one wants more and the other one doesn't.
Right. And that's the kind of thing where you also can't really do like a little bit.
A little bit, right. Totally. Yeah. So there are these, you know, there are these pieces that are going, and he's going to have to decide, am I willing to ride out those waves of longing? Because I'm sure there's going to be a moment where he sees a son having a catch with his father and thinks, oh, wow, like I would like that. There's going to probably potentially be moments like that for him. And is he willing to experience that longing and grief? And he's going to have to. The one thing I would recommend for this couple is keeping the open lines of communication. So if he says he's going to stay, and he's willing to give this up for her, she has to be open to hearing that he may have moments, and it's not, you know, necessarily going to be all day, every day, but he may have moments of feeling like a little sad about not being a dad. And they both have to be able to tolerate that and not have it turn into I told you we should have broken up. I gave you the out. You didn't take it. And now you're not allowed to feel that way. Because you decided that you wanted this anyway. I think there still has to be that opening for, today I saw this, it triggered me, I felt a little sad, I just wanted to tell you about it.
Right, even if that's not something that you feel at all.
Right. But I think it will be a wedge between them if she gives him this choice, he makes his choice, and then he's like never allowed to talk about it ever again.
Right.
I think that's going to create a lot of distance. That's where the resentment really comes in versus him coming home one day and saying, you know, I saw my nephews and I felt really sad today. It's something, because this couple could, you know, they could have been infertile or they could have had trouble having a kid or they could have not mm-hmm. been able to do it. And there's those moments of feeling sad about that, that they would be forced to deal with. So I think just being open to each other's unpleasant emotions in the process is going to keep them connected.
Yeah. And I mean, the nice thing about him being a man is that it's not as time sensitive that he fully like figure that out.
Right. So if in 2 years he's like, you know what, I tried this, I still really feel this longing, it's, you know, then
yeah,
maybe in 2 years down the line. I mean, that probably doesn't make her feel great. That I think that's her fear. Like, I want to kind of, you know, I want to cinch this up. I want to make a decision. I know we're both on the same page,
right,
so we can move on with no potential snafus, which,
well,
anything can happen.
That's a good thing for her to consider. Like, if that happened, let's say he was like, all right, I love this relationship, I really like doing it, and you know, for now I'm happier in the relationship, but if down the line he's like, I changed my mind, which again is a little bit more of an option for him, it's unfairly, but right, whatever it is,
totally,
is she gonna be okay with him leaving at that point? And she might right. be. I mean, that's the beauty, again, like the beauty, I think, of wanting a child-free life is that I feel like there's so many less like time sensitive, like.
Right. It takes the timeline kind of out of it.
Yeah. So it's like, if you love your partner and you're having a great time, like be with them for as long as it's great. And then when it's not, leave. Like, that's sort of like, I always thought it'd be like amazing to date as like a 40-year-old divorced woman with two kids. Like, right. You're kind of like. Right. You're just doing what, like, you can date like a man. You can date like,
right.
You know, it doesn't like, you can date for fun. Like,
totally. Yeah, I see that. And there's also not this idea of like, if you leave me, you're leaving me like with these kids, you know. It's like, okay, you're leaving me and it's just me. Like, I don't have to like pick up the pieces and protect these lives and there's not all this involvement. So yeah, it sounds like if she's okay with it now, I'm assuming she could be okay with it if he changes his mind. But leaving the lines of communication very open are going to reduce the risk of her being blindsided by it too. So she's going to, you know, have her finger on the pulse of how he's feeling about it versus she thinks they have one conversation, he's over it, he's decided to stay. And then 2 years later, he's like, you know what? I've been thinking this whole time, this isn't working and I'm out.
Right.
Which can help her feel a little bit more safe. You know?
I agree. All right. Well, let us know how this one pans out.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah.
Summer is just around the corner, so it's time to say goodbye to those jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and dresses. I wanted to refresh my wardrobe for the warmer weather without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I have a lineup of timeless pieces I want that will keep me looking fresh year after year. As the summer's rolling in, I just bought a beautiful pair of linen pants. They are so comfy. I'm going to go back and get one in every color. I can wear them to work. I can wear them out. They are super luxury quality. I'm obsessed. Quince has amazing items like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman by partnering directly with top factories and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel good about what you're wearing on every level. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/oversharing for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/oversharing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/oversharing. With Mother's Day coming up, I wanted to take a quick moment to appreciate not only the moms, but anyone who's taken on the role of caregiver. You do everything for everyone else. Now it's time to do something for you. Looking at you, eldest daughters, OneSkin has a simple, scientifically validated routine that keeps your skin looking and feeling good while targeting the root cause of aging. For a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase using the code oversharing when you check out at oneskin.co. You do so much for others. Try OneSkin today and do something good for yourself this Mother's Day. I have tried OneSkin. I've been using it for about 2 months. I love the routine. It's made my skin much smoother, much more supple, and the routine is super simple to do. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. In a third-party, double-blind, 12-week clinical study, OS1 Face was clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier, improve skin health markers, and diminish visible signs of aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code oversharing at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code oversharing. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Do Betches?
Let's do it. Dear Jordana and Dr. Naomi, I'm a huge fan of the podcast and get so excited every Tuesday for a new episode. I'm hoping you can help me navigate a tricky friendship dilemma. My best friends from college have been trying to plan a big girls trip for years. We live in different parts of the country and all have different types of work schedules, PTO availability, so we don't get to see each other as much as we'd like, but have remained very close over the years and talk often. We're finally narrowing down the details for an international trip and we're so excited. But now one friend really wants to bring her girlfriend because this is a destination she's also wanted to visit. The rest of us tried to kind of gently say we weren't planning on bringing our partners, we're all in long-term relationships, but tried to seem open-minded to the idea. I do really like her girlfriend and have fun with her whenever we're together, but I'm disappointed that my friend seems so determined for her to join this trip. I feel like this was supposed to be just the friends, especially since we get so little time together. Even though our significant others all get along, I think it would change the vibe and logistics of the whole trip. I also can't help but wonder if part of the reason why it feels different for her to bring her partner is because she's a woman. So it would still be a quote-unquote girl's trip versus those of us in heterosexual relationships. Her girlfriend also has a lot of similar interests as the rest of us, so some activities that her boyfriend slash husbands wouldn't be super into, like a wine tasting, spa day, or lounging in pajamas, chatting, and watching cheesy movies would be the things that her girlfriend would also enjoy. I'd be into couples trips in the future, but really wanted this to be just our original group. I'm not sure how to articulate this to my friend without making it seem like I don't like her girlfriend. We are all in our 30s now. Some of us are married slash engaged, and no one has kids yet, but that's probably coming soon. At that point, I know it'll be even harder for these friends-only trips to happen, so I want to soak up as much of this time as we can. Conversely, my boyfriend is super supportive of this idea of it just being a friend's trip. He usually does 1 to 2 guys' weekends trips a year, so I think he recognizes the importance of having separate time with just your friends. I may also have a different perspective because he and I do vacation together frequently, so I don't really feel the need to bring him along on my friend trip too. Am I overreacting? Should we just have the girlfriend come along since it might not really change our plans much? Should we pick a totally different destination that none of our partners would be interested in? Am I a bad girlfriend because I don't want my boyfriend to come? Am I trying to hang on to some nostalgic feeling from the past when I should just be accepting of the reality of our lives now? Thanks for your help. Sincerely, Betch, craving quality friend time.
I thought this was a very interesting dilemma.
Totally.
Because I kind of... Sorry, go ahead.
Tell me.
No. I was saying I felt like both sides of it. Because it's like, on the one hand, you're kind of like, I just want like the group that I'm comfortable with, that I've known forever. And I agree with what she says. I think she's pretty self-aware. Like, I'm trying to recreate a little bit of the past here. Mm-hmm. And like, that's sort of the whole point of the trip. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's like, I agree, like the fact that her friend's partner is a woman kind of does make it feel, because I think if her friend was dating, had a boyfriend that she was trying to bring onto this all girls trip, it would feel a lot like a lot more crazy.
Yeah, like invasive to the girls thing. I agree.
Right.
Which isn't fair, right? It's like gender. But I guess that she pinpointed what it really is, which I think was interesting, is that it's more about if you had a guy who was like loved spa days and like, you know, hanging out, chatting, you know, whatever, like maybe it would feel different. But there is this idea that they just would feel awkward doing the things that you want to do. So that makes sense.
I also think there's this other part of it that's like, you want to spend the week kind of like leaning into each other as individuals. And sometimes when someone is with their partner, it can feel like that's another relationship that they're attending to. Like it's not.
Yes.
And you can't like fully, you know, keep bringing up the stories of the past that you guys thought were so funny. That, and usually I think when you have friends from high school or college, that's like a huge part of what bonds you.
Right.
When you're living in all these
reminiscing.
Places. Right. Yeah. Reminiscing, talking about those funny things, updating about things you heard about people from your past. Like that's a big part of it. And I could see why you're kind of like, I don't want to have to like change that conversation because this person who's coming along doesn't really get it.
Right.
So I think it's a totally valid thing to want it to just be their friends. Now, I don't know how intensely, like, my own thought is, like, it's very valid to want it. I don't know how much she's allowed to say she can't come.
Right. I agree with everything you said. However, I think in the nature of accepting the changing, you know, nature of life and that she does have this person and this person could fit in with their group, it does seem sort of a little bit middle school to kind of be like, nope, it's the five of us and no one else is allowed to come because we have this clique. And it's, you know, I remember in middle school, it was like you would take the first initial of the names of the people in the group and create like a little acronym or like a, you know, a little clicky thing that was like very clear that
who's
we are
in
creating this.
And who's out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's in and who's out. So I do think a mature response would be to say, you know what? We're open to change. We're open to having your girlfriend, if this is maybe going to be someone that's going to be in her life permanently, perhaps. I don't know how serious they are. I think that matters too in some ways. It's sort of like maybe we would invite this person into our group as another female who has similar interests, and kind of allowing the group to evolve in that way, I think would be mature and maybe even beneficial. You could have a new dynamic and you could just embrace the change that is. So I do think that would be, it would be a nice thing for them to do, to include this person. I do think, like you said, there would have to be a conversation of like, where the girlfriend would have to be aware that like, we're not going to not talk about all of our memories. We're going to still do the thing. And if you feel left out or excluded from that conversation, that's part of you joining in with this thing that has all this history. And we're kind of, you know, happy or not so happy, whatever. We're like open to having you come.
Right.
But there might be moments where you feel, you know, like you don't understand what's happening and we don't want to have to not reminisce or cut that short because we feel badly. But I do think it would be nice to say, hey, I'm open to a new reality. I'm open to maybe we add a member to our group because she fits in well. And
yeah, I think if anything, adding her to the group is only really an issue for the friend. Like, I love Mike, but I don't want him in my friend group. Like, right. that's why I wouldn't invite him on a girls trip. I'm like, I like this time without you. I like this time. I'm time to like connect with my friends where I don't have to tell you everything that we're talking about or explain right. everything that's going on. Like, I feel like it makes our relationship stronger because I have a full life outside of you, and experiences outside of you. And so, again, I don't think like that takes anything away from the friends, especially if they like her and she's like a cool hang. But if I were the the friend who's bringing her girlfriend, I would try to keep it separate for me, not for anyone else.
Right. Yeah. And I could see, I think a lot of people would kind of want that, to sort of have their own friendships be separate. I guess it's hard when your significant other has very similar interests. It almost could feel like excluding. Like if you're kind of like, okay, mm-hmm. we're going on this girls trip, we're all going to be like lounging around doing girl things and just like chatting, and Mike's probably like, that's the last thing that I want to do, so go have fun. Right. I have no interest in that.
Yeah, it's convenient that he doesn't want to do that. I guess it's right. I'm trying to imagine a situation where he was very interested in doing all those things.
Right. And even if it was an activity that he was obsessed with, even if you're like, we're doing a, you know, Major League Baseball park tour, you know, like we're going to hit up all the baseball parks, and, you know, he probably still wouldn't want to do that with like all of your girlfriends that, you know, are going to be having all these like deep interpersonal probably conversations or whatever right. you guys talk about. And he's like, I just want to, you know, watch the game and like, you know, not talk the whole time or whatever he wants to do.
Talking about reality TV and all that other
right. stuff. So this is a tough question. I do agree that it's kind of on the girlfriend. If she sounds like the girl, you know, the friend with the girlfriend wants her there. But I will tell her, I think it would be nice to be open to seeing how it goes with the girlfriend there, and maybe having a conversation with the friend and being honest. Like, you know, at first I did want it to kind of just be us, nothing against her. You know, I just don't want to have to feel uncomfortable for her if we're talking about something that she just doesn't know about. I don't want to have, you know, I don't want to feel badly for her or feel like she's being excluded. But if you think she's fine with it and you're fine with it, then maybe we can give it a try. But I don't think that keeping it together just for the sake of like, it's like, you know, the whatever,
the Fab OG, Five.
Yeah. Fab Five. Like, I don't think that's a legit reason to keep it together.
No, I agree with that. And I think since they are, it sounds like they're a little older in long-term relationships, like they seem like they're a little more mature. If this was like their early 20s, I could see why they would be more like, you know, we're just out of college. This is like my break from the real world. I'm not trying to accept reality, which I think a lot of that is, but it seems like this is sort of the new reality and they should all get on board with it. And I think if her fear is also, and I think this can happen also when someone brings their significant other, is like they're sort of like off doing their own thing and it doesn't really mm-hmm. feel like they're fully there. If that's a fear of hers, I think she can preemptively bring that up. I don't know if that would be the case. It seems like she didn't say anything to lead itself to be that case. But I think sometimes when there's like one couple in the group, they all often like do their own thing a little bit,
right?
Especially if it's a newer relationship, maybe.
Right.
So if that's the thing, I would just preempt the trip with that, so you don't feel any like resentments, and you sort of let it be known before, and then just try to get over it, and maybe she'll decide not to bring her.
Right. Or I think that's one positive outcome. I think the other positive outcome is maybe she comes and you're like, you know what? You feel like the sixth sister this whole time. And like, where have you been? This is great. You're fun and you're funny. And I think if the girlfriend can be cool with like, I'm not feeling excluded. I'm not giving off a vibe of like, how dare you guys not like fill me in right. on every detail.
Or I'm annoyed. Like, they keep talking about these stories that I wasn't there for.
Yes. Like we've all been in that situation where somebody brings, maybe not a girl's trip, but where somebody brings like an outside person, and the outside person is not cool with being the outside person. Like they have to be self-assured and confident and realize that like they're not being excluded because nobody likes them. They're just, you know, this is what they're doing, and I'm just here and I can sit back and watch and enjoy and maybe take a breather and go for a walk by myself if I'm feeling like this isn't, you know, I think if the girlfriend's cool, it'll be cool and it can enjoy it. That would be the ideal. But I do think maybe a little, like you said, a preemptive conversation of like, these are my real feelings. I'm anxious about it for these reasons, but I do really like her and maybe she could be a good addition to our group. I just, you know, these are my concerns. So
yeah, I think that's fair. Right.
That's always a tough conversation to have, but I think you'll feel better after having had it.
I agree. And it's, yeah. And I think that like at that point, she can decide, given that information, if it feels like that's going to be fine with her girlfriend, or maybe have that side conversation with her girlfriend, yes, talking about the trip, and then see if her girlfriend still wants to come.
Yeah, totally.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been to therapy for many years, spending a few nights alone with myself and my own thoughts before I am able to go out and recharge and connect with people is a huge part of what I learned to do in therapy. It's learning about myself, learning about what makes me tick, which isn't the same necessarily as someone else, and learning how to balance my own needs against the needs that I have for work or friendship or any kind of socializing. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/overshare today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/overshare.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, let's do some intentions.
All right.
Hi, Dr. Naomi and Jordana. First, I want to say I love the Betches podcasts. Oversharing and You Up have gotten me through some challenging times over the last year, and I'm grateful to you for that. Thank you. I'm writing because I'm going through what may be the hardest week I've ever experienced. Tomorrow night, I'll be saying goodbye to my dog, Darcy. She included a photo below. I adopted Darcy in 2015 when I finished grad school, and she quickly became the most important part of my life. I've had family dogs before and I love them to pieces, but Darcy and I have a different and really special bond. For context, I'm 37 and single. I live on my own and my work went completely remote during the pandemic. I also experienced a pretty serious bout of depression in 2018 and then again during the pandemic. I think that explains the strong bond. Codependency, question mark. For years, we've had a lot of time with just the two of us, and she not only was a wonderful companion during the good and tough times, she very literally saved my life. Darcy is now around 13 or 14 years old and has had a brain tumor that is progressing rapidly. I know it's time to let her go, and I think she's ready. However, I am very unwell. I know it's normal to grieve your pet, but I'm writing because there's an aspect of this grief that I'm dreading and I know is going to hurt for a long time. Because we spend so much time with just the two of us, we have a lot of little traditions or habits together. For example, every week we go for a long walk while I listen to Oversharing. Aw, love that. We travel to see friends and families and family a lot, and having her with me greatly eased the homesick feeling I usually get when we leave. Last year, I bought a townhome, and a part of making it my home has been making it her home. Her presence is everywhere. She has so much stuff. It will be weeks of me seeing her things like beds, treats, stuffed animals before I can get everything put away. Over the coming weeks and months, there will be so many moments that I have a strong association with my time with her, and they'll feel like knives every time. I'm hoping you can help me with an intention to deal with these times where I see something or experience something that reminds me of her. This is going to cut deep for a while, so if you have anything you think can help, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you again for all you do. Sincerely, a gutted batch. P.S. I do have wonderful friends, family, and coworkers. I know this comes off as me being some kind of recluse with my dog, but that's not the case at all. I have a great support system. And then she includes a picture with her dog.
I cried a little when I read this email.
Oh, I know you had really a very similar kind of experience with the pet.
Yeah. So I can definitely relate to this feeling of, you know, there's like a lot of trending stuff about like how people are obsessed with dogs or obsessed with their dogs or obsessed with other, you know, not, I don't know about trending, but it's like just a big thing about how people are.
It's like a trope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That like, you know, dogs are better than people. And like, I only come to your house to see your dog. Even that song that's like, my kids like it, that she's breaking up with the guy and she's like, F you. And your mom and your sister and your job, yeah, everybody but your dog. It's like, like, I think a lot of people can relate to like, the only thing I like about my ex was his dog.
That's very funny.
The reason why is because animals provide all the goodies about interpersonal relationships without any of the stuff that we deal with, right? Like the drama and the conflict and the, you know, betrayals and the, you know.
It's very unconditional.
Unconditional and simple. You love me. I love you. You know, I know what to expect. I'm going to get the same thing every single time. And that feels really safe. So I do think, and then that combined with the fact that when you have an animal, they're a lot of times, like she said, even working from home in the pandemic, they are with you and you develop routines with that animal that people really don't develop with even their significant other. Like your significant other isn't like following you around the house, you know, your Hopefully. Significant other isn't like, you know, cuddling up on your toes at night, like laying at the edge of your bed or, you know, all these little routines. So I do think sometimes it can feel like an even bigger loss than losing a person that you don't live with because you don't have, and she's, you know, honing in on the parts of losing an animal that are going to be very triggering, which are like the reminders, the daily little bits that you don't even think of, that if you lose your aunt who lives in California, it's like you're going to wake up in the morning and like see her empty coffee cup on the table, you know, and right. like be thinking of that. So there's a lot of these reminders. Like I know that, and this is probably what she'll experience, that when I lost Ralphie, there were so many times when I would see like a towel, like at the edge of the bed, like a bundled up towel. And I would like look like excitedly, you know, in the beginning, it doesn't happen anymore, mm-hmm. but she can take solace in that. But it would almost be like these things that you expect to be there and then they're not. And those moments are super triggering. So for sure, I can validate that this is going to be tough. And I know a lot of people go through this. And there's the only way out is through, as they say. So I don't think that she can, you know, get around this any other way, but really allowing herself to kind of be in her grief.
Right. And I feel like the fact that she's single, and I think you know, you had Ralph when you were single for a bit.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like there's this time that, it was kind of like
just the, like they were like everything, especially everything. Like I would imagine in the pandemic where it's like that's the only like other creature that was there that like went through it all with you, like had the like that up and down experience.
Totally. And that's the other piece too, is she talks about that she did have an episode of depression. And I think her dog being with her during that time, a lot of times what happens is when people do experience depression, what different degrees of depression, but when you experience an episode of depression that feels scary in some way, like you really can't function, or you know, you're not getting out of bed, you're not seeing your friends, you're not performing at work, you're not exercising, like real, you know, functional depression in a way that's impairing your functioning, there's a fear that happens whenever you start to get like a little bit sad, or there's a grief process in impending of like, what if I go there again? You know, what if mm-hmm. it gets so bad that I'm in that place again? So I think once you've experienced that, it becomes traumatic, where it's like, now not only am I dealing with whatever I'm dealing with, but I'm dealing with the fear of having it like knock me off my ass, which is, you know, that's scary. So I think the fact that in the past, when she had that, she had her dog with her, and now, you know, she not only may end up going through something like that, but she's going to have to do it without her dog, probably feels doubly scary. But so all this validation might be making her feel worse.
Too much validation.
So that is not my intention, but I will say that it does get easier and time will heal. So the intentions that I wrote for her in terms of how to kind of go through this process and how to stay focused with intention as you're going through this is I wrote two. One is, I will honor my grief process with acceptance and presence. I will recognize when I'm judging or fearing my emotions. So allowing herself to be in her moments of grief. I'll honor it with acceptance and presence, and not, you know, and then the second part was I'll recognize when I'm judging or fearing my emotions. So that's the part that takes that's like the feel your feelings piece without thinking about your feelings.
Okay. So what's an example of something that she would feel that she might judge herself or judge the feeling for? Like, can you give me?
I'm just a depressed person. Why is this taking me so long? This isn't normal. Nobody else feels like this. Why, you know, I'm going to, and then the, you know, fearing my emotions is the part where she's like, oh no, because right now I feel so, I'm so physically affected by this that it, then the fear is I'm going to end up being able to get out of bed, or I'm going to end up in another depressive episode, or I'm going to kind of predicting forward what's going to happen based on the experience that she's having in that moment, instead of just allowing it to be, this belongs, this is here right now. Means nothing about tomorrow, means nothing about 4 hours from now. This is just what I'm experiencing in this moment. And not, this doesn't mean anything about you as a person, about your mental health, about your future, about anything. It's just a feeling. And that leads me to my second one, which is, I will give myself the strength to grieve by recognizing that the waves of emotion have a beginning and an end. So when she's in that wave and it feels like it's so heavy, and like she said, the way she describes it, knives, and, you know, this is going to cut deep. And, you know, when she's in that moment of feeling like she's being stabbed through the heart, recognizing to help her gain the strength that feeling is going to start and it's going to end. And it might come back the next day, but it's not going to be unrelenting all day, every day, forever.
Right.
That's a fact. You know, that feeling is going to start, it's going to end. And if she can remind herself of that as she's going through it, it'll give her the strength not to push it away and turn it into a judgmental. That's what our minds like to do. When something feels bad, we turn to our brain to
like yell at us for feeling that way. Yeah.
And it creates a little bit of a distraction, because now maybe it's not so sad. Now maybe it's like angry or it's a little
frustrated
or you're trying to create a, like, what's the matter with me? I need to do this to make me feel better. I need to do that. I need to, you know, it just takes it and turns it into something other than what it is, which is just deep grief. And
right.
If she lets it, makes it to sit a problem there,
to be solved.
Yes. Not,
yeah.
Exactly. Exactly that. And then once you turn it into a problem to be solved, now you're like off on a sidetrack that you, then you need to get yourself back into the real track, which is just feeling the feelings, accepting them, letting them live there for as long as they will. The more you create a problem to be solved, it just stretches out the whole process and makes it take longer because now you're off on a track of problem solving and not really, you know, doing the work of feeling your feelings, which will come and will go if you're in it. If you distract yourself and you allow yourself to get into that other mode, it makes the grief process feel like maybe it's like a softer version of grief, but it's a longer, softer version.
Right.
Of grief.
It's like picking at a scab, I feel like, or mm-hmm. like not like fully letting something like heal or feel bad. Or like almost like taking pain meds sometimes where you're like.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that where it's, you know.
Temporarily like, making you feel better, but then the come down of it is like bad.
Right. You're not really like, you know, focusing where you need to focus, which is like healing yourself. Mm. So yeah, I feel bad for her. It's not going to be fun. You know, she's in for a bit of a ride, but you can do it. You can do it. You know, just let the waves come. I love the wave analogy because it's almost like if you've ever been in a rough ocean mm-hmm. and if you just like sit there and you're like afraid that the wave is going to hit you and you're not like willing to dive into it, then it ends up like really tossing you around versus like, okay, I'm just going to close my eyes and I'm going to dive into the bottom of this thing and like have faith that I'm going to pop up on the other side eventually.
And then it's done. Is there like and I know this is like a weird question, maybe it doesn't have an answer, but like, is there a time that you can expect to be grieving? And then it's like, does it ever end? Like, is it like a clinical?
Oh, like a time frame you're saying?
Is there a clinical time frame in which like you're supposed to feel better or something? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the DSM and all that, they do tend to come up with numbers of like what's normal and not, but I honestly would give it zero weight. I think it really, you know, varies person to person. And I think it varies depending on how you're leaning into it. You know, like if you're going out and you're distracting yourself and you're drinking and you're, you know, doing drugs or you're just distracting yourself, it probably is going to take longer because you're not really accepting. Yeah. So I can't put, I wish I could. I can't really say that there's a number, but I will say that if you're doing it, if you're doing the work and counseling would help and there's no, believe me, counselors see people for pet loss. That's a thing. So don't be ashamed to go in and say, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. It's huge. But if you're really processing that in the right way, I can't say how long it will take, but I know that it will get better over time.
Well, that's, I'm sure, encouraging for the listener.
Thank you for sharing, because I know a lot of people can relate to this. So I was glad that we did this question.
For sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's move on to some lighter triggers.
Yes. Some of these were really funny. I'm excited.
Very funny. I really enjoyed this. Hi, Jay and DN. Are we saying this? Huge fan of the pod, as well as you up. Sure, you could be DN. You could be Jay. I have a triggered scenario that might be a bit on the lighter end. My boyfriend and I have been living together for a year, and we each have one child from a previous relationship. Overall, it's great and the family blending has been smooth, but here's my triggered scenario. I do all the grocery shopping, which includes buying easy-to-go snacks and treats that we put into our kids' lunches for school. He stays up late and snacks, routinely getting into their stuff like a bear. Recently, he ate a whole box of cookies, and then the kids had no treat in their lunch. He ate all of his 4-year-old son's Halloween candy, and my 7-year-old daughter has gotten smart enough to start hiding her candy or birthday loot bags or any little treats in her room to protect them from this animal. At first, it was funny, but now it's getting annoying because he doesn't give me any heads up that the snacks have been demolished. He'll quietly hide the wrappers and evidence and wait until the school morning scramble for me to realize we have nothing. I've tried the just buy more snacks approach, but that translates to just eat more. What would you do? Snack starve betch. This is very funny.
This is very funny. It sounds like there's a little bit of an eating disorder, like a binge eating issue going
anything,
on
anything, like, right. You're trying to eat right. anything in the house.
Like the more she buys and the more he just eats.
If you find yourself in a Lunchables at like 1 a.m., there might be, you might have a problem.
Smearing the cold sauce onto those like hard crackers with the...
Right. It's not even good. Yeah.
It's disgusting. Yeah. So I don't know. It sounds like she's tried a couple of strategies, including hiding the food.
Right. I mean, this is pretty triggering because especially because it's like her... It's not even like... Like, okay, he has this issue where he's binge eating. It's like, and I have to do, like, and there's, you're taking food away from the kids. Like, right. And I'm the one who has to deal with it.
Yes. And I can relate to that morning thing where you just want to like get everybody's lunch packed and out the door. And then there's nothing there. And he's sitting there with like chocolate on his face. <you know? laughs> That's annoying. Maybe what you can do is you can say, look, I will do the grocery shopping. You are going to be packing the kids' lunch in the morning. So if there's no snacks to put in there, you can run out to 7-Eleven, like make him kind of have to deal with the consequences of right. his binge eating, where it's sort of like, if I'll do the grocery shopping, you pack the lunches. So if there's nothing in there for him to pack, then he's going to have to replace or be mindful of like, okay, I'm packing the lunch in the morning. What am I going to put into the lunch?
See, I'd be afraid of that he would just be like, here's $2, go buy lunch. Or right. like, okay, they won't have a snack today. And like, I mean, we talked about this before where like, it seems like moms are maybe a little more invested in everything going like how they want it to go. But right. I would be worried about him like solving the problem in a way that I don't approve of.
Totally. Right. That he'll be like throwing like a handful of peanuts like directly into the lunchbox.
Yeah. You know,
like floating around.
Right. Yeah. Like I would say, I would just be like, I work really hard. I do all the family grocery shopping. That's something I don't have to do. I like, it's important to me that the kids are like well nourished and they have the snacks that I buy for them. Like, can we discuss this problem of yours?
Right. Right. This definitely needs a conversation. And for her to say that, you know, yes, it was funny in the beginning, but now it's starting to make me resentful and angry. And so I, you know, if he's a reasonable person, unless he legitimately has like binge eating disorder, which I'm not even joking. It sounds like there is some type of an impulse control, emotional eating thing going on there, in which case maybe he needs treatment for that, you know? So like if she has this conversation in a real way where she's like, okay, it was funny. Now it's not funny. Like you're eating the disgusting, like candy, you know, goodie bags with like ring pops and, you know, whatever else is in there that are not meant for like really adult consumption. Is this something that you're having a hard time controlling? Maybe that's the approach that she takes. It's like, it was funny. It's not really funny. It's starting to bother me. If you can't help yourself, how can I help you? Like what's going on here? Right. Is there a bigger issue? And let's work on it together because this is starting to make me feel really angry.
Nothing makes a man fall into line more than you trying to talk to him about his feelings about what he's doing excessively. Right. He'll be like, all right.
Fine, as long as we don't have to talk about this again.
I mean, kind of. You could see where it's like, okay, like you have this late night eating habit. It didn't bother me before. Now it actually seems to be affecting like the way that I'm during my morning. So if you want, like, it would be great if you can't stop doing it, we're going to need to get you some help.
Yep. See how quickly he starts to pack those. Right. What are they called? Dunkaroos.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he could discuss why he does it or like what might help him not do it. I guess only he would know, since she's saying more snacks, more is not helping.
Yeah. Or maybe, I guess, I don't know if this is the case. I doubt it. But maybe he wants to be cared for in the way that, like, he wants snacks that are like his snacks. So I see you laughing. Maybe he feels like he wants a little bit of that mommying from her, where she's like, you know what, honey, I bought you. This is just for daddy. No, these are daddy snacks. Nobody touch daddy snacks. And you can have your own stash of snacks that the kids can't touch. So maybe that would be helpful, and he can come and pick out the snacks that he would like, or he can place his order and those are his snacks. Maybe he feels jealous that he doesn't get any snacks.
Maybe. Let's get to the root of this. Also, like, I don't know, is he like drunk eating it? Is he like whatever?
Yeah.
I think you definitely could be like, we can't have a situation where like my daughter is hiding food from you because mm-hmm. she, like her like treats.
Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't make me feel confident in co-parenting with you.
Totally, totally. It does seem like a simple solution. Like, okay, just hide the snacks somewhere where he can't find them.
But it's also kind of like, what kind of? Why do we have to live this way?
No, not a good way to live. I think this requires a little bit of a more serious. Like, we're laughing and it's funny, and they probably have found it funny, but now at this point, like, it's time to get serious.
I'm just imagining, like, I'm divorced. My child comes back from, like, if it were the other way around, like, their dad's house, and they're, like, they're going to school without any lunches. It's because their, like, stepmom has been eating all of them.
Right.
It's like, get it together.
Yeah, totally.
I think I would say this is, like, the first time, I think I agree, it would be funny, but that second time I would give it, like, a 6 or a 7 if it was actually like stopping the children from being fed properly.
Right. Or just in the stopping the children from being fed, or like just complicating her morning where she's like now scrambling, in the back of the pantry for like a leftover bag of squash chips to throw in the, the lunch. It's just stressful. Mornings are stressful already. So yeah, I agree.
Okay.
If this doesn't stop after a serious conversation, then it's like an 8. At this point, I agree. Maybe a 6.
Okay. Good luck. Let us know. Let us know which snacks they are. I think that will make it funnier or less funny, depending on which snacks they are. Okay.
Right. Let's do one last one.
Hi, Jordan and Dr. Naomi. Getting right to it. I love the pod. While my sister and I were at our parents' house, she found my childhood diary in my old room and thought it was so hilarious that she decided to read it out loud to our other family members without giving me any heads up. When I realized what she was doing, I asked her to stop, and she just said, no, but it's so funny, as if that gives her permission. I hadn't seen that diary since I was a kid, and I had no idea what was in it, so I felt anxious and embarrassed as she started to read it. Thankfully, the entries weren't even that bad. It was just me complaining about my 5th grade boyfriend. I can't help but feel a little violated, though. That was supposed to be private, and a part of me feels protective over my inner child and doesn't think it's fair for her thoughts to be read and mocked, especially out loud to a group of people, just because some time has passed. Should I be triggered? Does privacy have an expiration date? Sincerely, little sisters will always be nosy.
I thought this was triggering.
I agree. I think that would be triggering too. It's kind of like, only I'm allowed to make fun of my like 5th grade self. Like, you don't get to make fun of her.
Totally. It's funny because she nailed it when I didn't realize at first even like why that felt so triggering. And she said it was like the respect that she has for her inner child, that like person that did at one point exist in this world, that technically that person doesn't really exist anymore. But wherever she is, she deserves that respect. Like if that was a real 5th grade girl who was like having her feelings thought and mocked, it would be like child abuse. It would be really emotionally abusive. So I could see why it feels like that little girl's still in there and she's protective over her.
And I think everyone can remember like a moment from like their childhood that they felt like they said or did something kind of cringeworthy. And it still makes you feel like a little weird because knowing, even though it's not you now, knowing that it was you then, you still feel like even like that embarrassment still kind of like,
you like still lives feel it in a you. Bit. Yeah, yeah, totally. I totally agree. It's an interesting philosophical concept, that idea of like, there was a you, the physical body of you, like you're still that same person, but you're totally not. Like that person's almost gone from this earth, but you're still here. It's
right. But they're not entirely gone. Like if you found a diary from when you were 20 and that's 20 something years ago, you would still be like, that's not me anymore. I don't like necessarily feel any of these things anymore, but that's still like me.
Totally. Well, it's funny because I have people that will come in and feel really badly or regretful, like someone who's say like 35 or 40 years old that feels like really badly or regretful about something that they did when they were like 16 or 17. And I'm, you know, the part of me that's detached from it is sort of like, that's not you. Don't, that was a different person. That was like a young child with a not a fully developed brain, and you were going, you know, like you, there's, you're not that person. You don't have to almost feel so responsible now at this age for that person's actions, but there is that we're still that person, even though it's so long ago, you can't totally detach from that.
Right. There's parts of you that you still see in that person or remember why you were thinking that way. So I agree. I think that's triggering. Her sister sounds kind of immature.
Yeah, or just not like not sensitive to that, to that like respect for the inner child, which I love that. I mean, we've talked about that on here before. I use that respect and love and care and tenderness that a lot of people do have for their inner child as a way to help them heal in the present, you know, because right. that inner child sometimes carries wounds that we don't have never been attended to properly. And if you as a fully grown adult can care for that, you know, be sensitive and like the most sensitive, like you can understand that child better than anyone. You were that child, but now almost creating that separation of like, I know that child inside and out, but I'm not that child. And I can kind of be a caretaker to that child. It's a powerful experience. So I'm glad that the bright side of this is that this listener is aware that she is in touch with her inner child and has that. So if she ever does feel like she needs to do some of that work, I think that that's something that's going, is a tool that she can use for, you know, to improve her mental health and get, you know, heal from old trauma, because some people really can't get in touch with that. Like they just can't feel it. Like I've tried that work with some people and they're just like, I can't
get there.
I can't do this. I can't get there. So,
yeah. I mean, if I were her, I would say that's my diary, still my diary, even though it's later. If I think it's funny, I'll share it.
Yes, totally.
Like I'm the one who gets to decide if it's funny. And so if I think it's, if you want to, you can find your diaries if you think they're funny and share
right.
it. And maybe I'll think they're funny, but like, because it's mine and because it's me, like I get to decide.
Totally. And she may have, if it was hers and she was sharing it on her own volition, she may have said like, oh my gosh, this is so funny. Look what I was thinking about when I was 10.
Right. I mean, it's also just like, it's everyone's a lot. I think it feels when you make fun of yourself, it's less like, it feels less mean than when someone else is making fun of you.
Yes, right. Totally. Yeah. And it just, I agree. It's that respect for that child that would not have wanted sister, aunt, whatever, you know, it was to be violating her privacy. It's tough. Kids are little people and they deserve their privacy too. Like I know that my girls have journals or diaries that they write in, and as much as I'm curious about what their little, you know, workings of their mind are, like that's their thing, you know?
Right. And now, I mean, when you're 27 and you find them in the house, not going to read them?
No. They're going to send them back. And if they want to share them, it would be funny and it would be so cute and I would love to hear it. And I'm sure right. if I gave them the chance to do it, like you said, if she wants to share it, she probably would have, you know, if she handed it back to her and said, oh my God, I found your diary from when you were a little girl. I'm sure she probably would have opened it right there and been like, oh my gosh, look at what I wrote. But it's because she decided to do that.
I agree. Violated. I'd give this.
I did literally feel a little triggered by this. I would give this like a 7.
Well, we've come from a home where a diary might be read if it was found.
Yeah.
So it's good that we've learned not to do that from from experience. So I would say, I'd give this 6 or 7. If it was her current diary, it would be like a 10. Like if it was like her diary from today.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
We actually get a lot of emails about people like reading diaries or any of that. I think looking through a phone is also kind of like reading a diary.
Right.
Seems like the modern adult equivalent.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people who write in who either do that or have someone have done that to you. And I think that's it feels like a very, very big violation.
Yeah, I agree. There are some things that you are allowed to have your own inner world that nobody else is privy to. All right. Well, good luck. Tell your sister that we disapprove.
Tell her to write in with why she thought that was okay.
Yeah.
But that's it for today's episode.
All right. That's our time.
Great work today.
Oversharing is produced by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Picot, and Rebecca Salz-McCann. Editing by Basilio Perez. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Send your advice emails to oversharing@betches.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-363-6294.
Thank you to our sponsor, First Response. A lot of us test more than once. That's why First Response created the Triple Check Pregnancy Test Kit, which includes 3 different tests all in one box. The kit includes the early results pregnancy test, 1 digital pregnancy test, plus 1 rapid result pregnancy test that gives you fast results in just 1 minute on the day of your missed period or any day thereafter. Each test in the kit offers a different way to learn your results, so when the time comes, you feel as confident as possible. All First Response pregnancy test products are available for purchase at all major retailers in-store and online. Be sure to pick one up today.
Betches.